Standing Order 43, the time for member statements has concluded. I call the Acting Prime Minister with arrangements.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I advise the House the Prime Minister is absent from question time today, and I will take questions on his behalf.
Questions without notice. Are there any questions? I give the call to the Honourable the Leader of the Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Acting Prime Minister. Would the Acting Prime Minister be able to provide an update to the House in relation to the release of 84 hardcore criminals from the Department of Immigration?
Give the call to the Acting Prime Minister.
I thank the Leader of the Opposition for his question. On the 8th of November, the High Court ruled in the case of NZYQ and Minister for Immigration and Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs and others. It was a decision which was made against the arguments that were put forward by the Commonwealth Government. And the consequence of the decision was the release of the individual referred to in the case, along with 83 other individuals into the community. It is fair to say that since the moment of the High Court's decision, there has been a significant degree, understandably, of anxiety within the community about the release of these individuals into the community, given the nature of offences that many of these individuals had committed at points in time in their life. The government, in releasing those individuals, put them on bridging visas where there were strict conditions, but we made clear that we would look at every option available to us, including legislative options. And this morning we introduced into the Parliament the Migration Amendment Bridging Visa Conditions Bill of 2023. This represented the most legally robust proposition which would put the strictest conditions, as the government saw it, in respect of these 84 individuals. Since then, we have been working cooperatively with the opposition around amendments to this piece of legislation. And I want to say up front, commend the Leader of the Opposition and thank him for the spirit in which he has worked with the government in relation to amending this legislation. And I want to say that there are six amendments that the opposition has put forward. The first is in relation to making curfews and electronic monitoring conditions mandatory, not discretionary. The second is requiring visa holders not to perform work or participate in any regular organised activity that involves contact with children. The third is requiring visa holders not to go within 150 metres of a school, childcare centre or daycare centre. The fourth is ensuring that each day of a breach of a visa condition be treated as a separate offence. The fifth is that if there is a visa holder who has been convicted of an offence involving violence or sexual assault, allowing the minister to put in place a no contact condition in respect of that individual. And the sixth is to establish mandatory minimum sentences in respect of those that breach this bill. The government agrees with these amendments in principle, and is working with the opposition to establish the precise amendments that will be put to these to the bill in the other place. The basis on which we are doing this is because we are in a position where this must be resolved immediately. And so this is being done on the basis that it passes this parliament today, passes the Senate this afternoon, and passes this House later this evening. This has been a matter of controversy and political debate in the public and indeed in this chamber. But I do want to say that despite that, what we have seen in the last few hours in the way in which we have cooperated across the aisle demonstrates that, notwithstanding differences and debate, Australia can look to their political leaders and their legislators as people who will act in their interest and work together to keep the community safe. I believe everyone who has been elected to this parliament comes here with the sincerity of representing the national interest, and central to that is maintaining the safety of the community. And in what we have been able to agree on today is an embodiment of that spirit on behalf of all of us.
Call to the honourable member for Moncrief.
My question is to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs. One of the hardcore criminals who's been released into the Australian community is Mohammed Rafiq, who has been convicted of both rape and sexual assault. On hearing of him being released into the Brisbane community, his victim said that she started crying immediately and felt a numbness. Has the minister or his department contacted this victim to provide her with any reassurance, assistance or support?
Call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you, Speaker, and I thank the member from Moncrief for her question. And my thoughts, and I'm sure the thoughts of every member in this place, are with that victim and with all victims who are or may be affected by these issues. But of course, as she would appreciate, I can't comment on individual cases. What I can say, though, is that the Department of Home Affairs is and has been engaging closely with state and territory enforcement agencies and proactively sharing information. Starting well before the decision in the current case was handed down, our border protection and our law enforcement agencies have been working together to make sure the toughest possible conditions have been placed on these individuals. It's also incumbent on our state and territory law enforcement agencies to enforce existing state and territory requirements and orders which have been put in place with regards to individuals.
The Minister will resume his seat. The Leader of the Opposition, a point of order.
Well, Mr Speaker, reluctantly I raise a point of order on relevance. I have respect for the Minister's contribution that he's made to date, but this is a very sensitive issue. If the Minister or his department haven't contacted the victim, would he commit to or undertake to making such contact, given the sensitivities and the obvious vulnerabilities that this individual is feeling?
I'll just ask the Minister to continue.
Yeah. Unfortunately, as I said, I'm not in a position to comment on the individual cases, but I can assure the Leader of the Opposition, the member who asked the question, and the House that I will endeavour to put him... that I will endeavour to put in place all appropriate arrangements to demonstrate the highest level of concern that we have for safety. But as I was saying, in this area, it is incumbent on the state and territory law enforcement agencies to enforce those existing orders, including parole conditions, intervention orders and sex offenders registration reporting obligations amongst local law enforcement options. And I say further to the answer of the Deputy Prime Minister, we have an opportunity, each of us, in this place and the other place, to come together to make a difference and impose even tougher requirements on all those affected so that we can come together to ensure community safety.
Yeah. Call to the Honourable Member for Swan.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Treasurer. What do today's jobs figures mean for the Albanese Labor Government's economic strategy, and what other approaches have been rejected? Yeah.
Call to the Treasurer.
Thank you, Speaker, and to the wonderful member for Swan for her question about today's labour force data. This side of the House, we are under no illusions about the pressures that our people are under and that our economy is under. Order. But we did get more welcome news today about the jobs market after yesterday's wages data showed the second consecutive quarter of real wages growth.
The member for Hume and the member for Deakin will cease interjecting. Treasurer will be heard in silence, just as the questioner was heard in silence.
Thank you, Speaker. 55,000 new jobs were created in October, which means that 620,000 new jobs have been created under this Albanese Labor government. More jobs have been created under this government than any other first-term government in history, and we're only halfway through our term. The unemployment rate is 3.7%, and the participation rate is at a record high of 67%, Mr Speaker. Now, since these monthly records were first kept in 1978, the unemployment rate has only had a 3 in front of it 20 times. 17 of those 20 times have been under the Albanese Labor government, Mr Speaker. So 620,000 new jobs, record participation, fastest quarterly wages growth in the 26-year history of the wages data, Our record-setting labour market is even more remarkable in a world of global uncertainty and volatility and conflict. And we welcome these outcomes today, and we welcome this strength in our labour market, because a secure job with decent pay is central to our efforts to help people with the costs of living. Yeah. Australians are doing it tough, but our economic plan is helping to take some of the sting out of these cost of living pressures and take the edge off inflation. Strong jobs growth, two quarters of real wages growth, $23 billion of cost of living assistance rolling out, the first surplus in 15 years, key investments in housing and skills and energy, Mr. Speaker. The Bureau of Statistics says that our efforts have taken half a point off inflation in the most recent data. Fitch Ratings, the RBA Governor, the IMF, they all say that our efforts and our economic plan is helping, not hampering, this important fight against inflation. Now, those opposite, Mr. Speaker, they want higher inflation, they want lower wages, and they want more debt. We know this because they voted against cost of living help. We know this because they don't support our efforts to get wages moving again in our economy. They left us deficits and debt as far as the eye could see, Mr. Speaker. And that's because their nasty negativity comes with a hefty price tag. This side of the House, we are cleaning up the mess that they left behind. We are working for Australia, and more Australians are working as a consequence.
The member for Page and Gippsland. Same, same. Give the call to the Honourable, the Leader of the Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Acting Prime Minister. The Prime Minister has left the country to go to San Francisco to meet with senior tech executives at a time when community safety is at risk from 84 hardcore criminals being released from detention by his government.
The Leader of the Opposition will cease for a moment. Members on my right will be warned if they interject while the Leader of the Opposition is asking his question. The Leader of the Opposition will be heard in silence, and he'll begin his question again.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Acting Prime Minister. The Prime Minister has left the country to go to San Francisco to meet with tech sector executives at a time when community safety is at risk from 84 hardcore criminals that have been released from detention by his government. The Prime Minister was unavailable to negotiate these matters this morning, and I want to thank the Acting Prime Minister for his engagement. In the Prime Minister's absence, can the Acting Prime Minister give an assurance that the government will make contact with each of the victims of these 84 individuals, and in the cases where the victim is deceased, the victim's family?
Give the call to the Acting Prime Minister.
In response to the last part of the question, we will make our best efforts to communicate with the families of victims around not only the circumstances of the release, but the steps that the government is now taking in accordance with the legislation as amended that is passed this parliament. We will do our best efforts in relation to that. In respect of the first element of the question that the Leader of the Opposition asked, indeed, the Prime Minister is in San Francisco right now at APEC, a meeting, a leaders' meeting, which has been attended by every Prime Minister, including the member for Cook, by all Liberal Prime Ministers since the establishment of APEC, along with Labor Prime Ministers. Now, we make no apology for the fact that we are engaging with the world. What we inherited when we came to power in May of this year, well, you opened it up, what we inherited in May of this year was the worst circumstances in terms of our global relations that this country has ever faced. We had a situation where there was, with our largest trading partner, there was no contact whatsoever. With the country with whom we have the greatest security anxiety, there was no formal defence dialogue in place at all.
On my left.
Now, what the government has done is we have been out there.
We have been out there in a way which has made sure that our country is safer, where our national security is improved and where our trade is improved. When the Prime Minister was in the United States, when the Prime Minister was in China, he was there representing Australian working people, creating Australian jobs by getting trade back in place, and that's exactly what he is doing in San Francisco right now. And what we have from those opposite, which is to shrilly yell out whenever anyone goes overseas, which is so compatible with the fact that when they were in government all they did was yell at the world, is completely lacking in understanding about what we need to do as a nation in terms of improving our economy and in terms of improving our national security. That is why the Prime Minister is in San Francisco right now. We make no apologies for that, and he is there representing Australians.
Call to the member for Newcastle.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Employment and Workplace Relations. Why is action to stop wage theft so important, and how will the Albanese Labor government's closing loopholes legislation protect workers from having their wages stolen?
Call to the Minister for Employment, Workplace Relations and the Minister for the Arts.
Thanks very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for Newcastle, someone who fights for jobs in Newcastle every single day, for good, secure jobs. The good news that has come through in terms of the number of people in work, in terms of wages finally getting moving, is welcome, but let's not pretend it's shared to everybody. It is true that wage growth under the Coalition never had a 4 in front of it, never had a 3 in front of it, and the average barely had a 2 in front of it. But it's also the case that even with wage growth finally coming through, now that we no longer have a government where low wage growth is a deliberate design feature of how they manage the economy, if you are somebody who is having your wages stolen, you are not seeing this. Now, if we think about when this issue really came to public life, because I want to describe, because not every underpayment is wage theft, we know that. But let's have a think and remember what happened with those 7-Eleven cases. There were two different forms of wage theft that we watched. The first was the half-pay scam, where people would be rostered formally for half the hours they actually worked. So in terms of the books, nothing was wrong. In terms of the difference between their hours at work and their pay, they were getting half of what they were actually doing. And the second form of wage theft that we saw then was the cashback scheme, where you'd be paid the correct amount and the manager would walk you across the store to the ATM in the corner, get you to take a chunk of your pay out and hand it back to the manager. Now, if that exact same worker, had walked back around behind the counter and taken money from the till, it would be a criminal offence. But because it was the employer stealing the money at work, it was not a criminal offence. Now, more than nearly a thousand days ago, I saw something that was extraordinary, where the opposition, having introduced laws to make wage theft a criminal offence, in the Senate voted against that provision that they themselves had introduced. And nearly a thousand days later, this morning, they did it again. They did it again, where the one crime they seem to be relaxed about never putting on the books is whether a worker has their wages stolen. Loopholes need to be closed. Workers should not be in a situation where somehow, if theft occurs to them, it's just always something we turn a blind eye to. It needs to be a crime. The loophole.
Before I call the member for Mayo, I'd like to acknowledge in the gallery today we have a delegation of 15 mayors and councillors from the National Growth Areas Alliance as guests of the member for Pearce, and also the Honourable Christopher Pearce, the former member for Aston and Parliament Secretary to the Treasurer. Warm welcome to you all. Give the call to the Honourable Member for Mayo.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Infrastructure. The Verdun Freeway interchange was built in the early 70s. It's not fit for purpose and only travels in one direction. Despite extensive state government planning and contributing $50 million to the project, you've cut the promised federal funding of $200 million. My community is rightly angry and wants to know why, as Minister, you don't believe we deserve an upgrade to our 50-year-old freeway interchange.
The member for Fisher will not interject before the minister even begins to speak. Give the call to the Minister for Infrastructure, Transport, Regional Development and Local Government.
Thanks, and can I thank the member for Mayo for a question? I know you are a long-term advocate for projects in your community, including this one. The facts of the matter are we have been left with an infrastructure investment pipeline that is an absolute and utter mess. There are projects that have been committed to, where there is insufficient funding to actually deliver what has been asked for. There is insufficient funding.
Order.
They have left us with known cost pressures of over $33 billion in the infrastructure investment pipeline, including $14.2 billion of known cost pressures on those projects that are yet to start. I understand that there will be communities who are disappointed by some of the decisions that we have made today, but I can say very clearly, that they should blame those opposite for leaving a pipeline that simply cannot be delivered, for in fact not being honest with communities, including yours, that there is insufficient funding. They have been all press release and no delivery. We will continue to work with states and territories for priority infrastructure projects. But what we have done today, we have guaranteed the $120 billion infrastructure investment pipeline. We have provided billions of dollars worth of cost pressures to states and territories, including $2.7 billion in South Australia, to make sure that the North-South Corridor can be delivered. And that is an incredibly important project for that state. And we will continue to work in partnership with states and territories to deliver projects, but not just press releases.
The minister has concluded her answer. Give the call to the honourable member for Werriwa.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Aged Care. How is the Albanese Labor government helping to fix the neglected aged care sector it inherited and getting wages moving for our dedicated and hard-working aged care staff?
Call to the Minister for Aged Care and Sport.
We support aged care workers in providing the best care for older people in her electorate. And Mr Speaker, Australia's aged care workforce is the foundation of the ambitious change that we are delivering for the sector. For too long, aged care workers were underpaid and they were undervalued. And finally, those workers have a government that cares for them as they care for our vulnerable. We stood beside workers in their fight for better wages, and as a result, they were awarded the largest ever increase to award wages in a work value case at the Fair Work Commission. A 15% increase to award wage minimums for 250,000 workers across the country, an $11.3 billion commitment. And for a nurse like Julie at Loretto Nursing Home in Townsville, this means up to 10,000 more a year. And for a personal care worker like Regina at Arcare Nirvana in Malvern East, up to $7,300 more every year. That is life-changing money. And those are not my words, Mr Speaker, those are the words of Sharon, aged care manager at Uniting Care in Weston. And the pay rise isn't the only life-changing reform that we have implemented and delivered in aged care. We have delivered increased transparency so that taxpayers can see where their money is being spent. We have delivered star ratings to help older people make informed choices about their own care. We have delivered a new funding model to better match care funding with the needs of older people. We have delivered an expanded serious incident response scheme to help keep older people safe. An independent pricing authority to ensure that the sector is getting the funding that they need to deliver quality care. We have delivered more carers with more time to care, and we have put nurses back into nursing homes 24/7, and we did it a year ahead of schedule.
Excellent.
We have delivered more than 100. We're working on more than 100 reform projects that we have on foot at the moment, and these reforms are having real and tangible impact on the ground. In the past year, there has been a reduction in the number of pressure injuries, a reduction in significant unplanned weight loss, a reduction in falls, a reduction in the use of antipsychotics, and a reduction in the use of physical restraints. Those opposites sat on their hands for more than a decade while they watched older people and the people that care for them struggle and suffer. While these people on this side of the House have been delivering in 18 months for those same people, getting results for those same people, that is what Labor governments do.
The call to the honourable member for Wide Bay.
Data obtained from the Queensland Government shows that almost half of the Bruce Highway is rated just 2 safety stars out of 5. Can the minister guarantee that life-saving projects along the Bruce Highway, like the 4-lane Tyro bypass, will proceed according to the same scope and timelines committed to in the government's October 2022 budget?
Whoever interjected, the member for Hunter will cease interjecting before the minister even begins speaking, or you'll leave the chamber. Give the call to the Minister for Infrastructure, Transport, Regional Development and Local Government.
Can I thank very much the member for his question and, of course, his advocacy for the Bruce Highway. The Bruce Highway is an incredibly important road to this country. It's an incredibly important corridor for the people of Queensland. I can absolutely guarantee that there have been no cuts to funding to the Bruce Highway. None.
Call to the honourable member for Spence.
My question is to the Minister for Health. How is the Albanese Labor government strengthening Medicare and making medicines cheaper? After a decade of cuts and neglect to our healthcare system, why is this work essential?
Call to the Minister for Health and Aged Care.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for Spence for his question. He is a terrific representative of the proud northern suburbs of Adelaide, a community that gave us Barnsley, Holden's, and Australia's best ever health minister, Neil Blewett, who introduced Medicare almost 40 years ago. And the member for Spence knows how important for his community Medicare and the PBS are, which is why he's constantly on his feet in this place, Mr. Speaker, backing in this government's plans to strengthen Medicare. At the end of budget week back in May, he hosted the Prime Minister and myself at a clinic, a GP clinic in Elizabeth, to discuss our historic investment that week in bulk billing. And I want to remind him of a quote from the owner of that clinic, who said to the media that day, he said this: "The tripling in the bulk billing incentive is going to make a big difference. Our clinic was actually going to put in a $10 to $15 charge for healthcare cardholders as a gap fee, and that's not going to happen anymore. Basically, it means more bulk billing doctors, more bulk billed patients, and we hope lower ED presentations at the hospital." And yesterday at the Health of the Nation Forum, an owner of a clinic in Townsville in the member for Herbert's electorate told that forum that they had introduced a gap fee for pensioners and kids in February because of cost pressures, and as a result of the tripling that took effect on the 1st of November, they'd got rid of that gap fee and they'd returned to bulk billing. As the College of GPs said, Mr. Speaker, the tripling of the bulk billing incentive genuinely is a game changer, because after a decade of cuts and neglect to Medicare, we know bulk billing has been in serious decline, as much as the former government tried to cover that up. And that decline was no accident. The father of the modern Liberal Party, John Howard, had said that bulk billing was an absolute rort. The Leader of the Opposition, when he was Health Minister, said, and I quote, "There are too many free Medicare services." So he tried to abolish bulk billing altogether. While he tried that, we've tripled the bulk billing incentive. When he froze the Medicare rebate for 6 long years, the Treasurer this year delivered the biggest across-the-board increase in the Medicare rebate in more than three decades, Mr Speaker, more than any time since Paul Keating was the Prime Minister. Well, after 10 years of cuts and neglect by a party that's never genuinely supported the Medicare system, we are getting on with the job of strengthening Medicare through tripling the bulk billing incentive, through rolling out a network of Medicare urgent care clinics that are open 7 days a week, fully bulk billed, and by delivering cheaper medicines.
The call to the honourable member for Wannan.
Thanks, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Immigration. The government initially said that no legislation was possible following the High Court decision, but days later the government has introduced legislation without the full High Court judgment having been handed down. Why is it not possible for the government to implement a preventative detention regime which would have prevented these 84 hardcore criminals being released into the community and creating a risk to the safety of Australians?
Give the call to the Minister. Order. Give the call to the Minister. Order. No one will be interjecting until I call the Minister. Order. I give the call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you, Speaker, for the question, for giving me the call, and thank you, Shadow Minister, for the question. But the premise upon which it proceeds just simply isn't true. We've never said that.
Yeah. Give the call to order. Members on my left, give the call. When the House comes to order, the member for Bowman will cease interjecting or be warned. So I can hear from the member for Hawke. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Skills and Training. How is the Albanese Labor government increasing access to skills and training for Australians after a decade of neglect?
Call to the Minister for Skills and Training.
Well, thank you, Speaker. Can I thank the member for Hawke for his question and his very strong advocacy for the vet sector indeed. I look forward to being with him at the Melton campus that's soon to be established. Creating a TAFE centre in Melton is really important for that community. Providing access to the vet sector is critical for the entire nation. And that's why, of course, this government has been ensuring that we invest in the vet sector and we provide the skills that are needed for workers to gain decent employment, career progression. And we also ensure that businesses that are crying out for skills find those skills through the efforts of this government, working with other state and territory governments and working with industry to ensure that happens. When we came to office, Speaker, the Jobs and Skills Summit was established by the Prime Minister and the Treasurer, which was a very good idea because it set the tone for collaboration, which is absolutely required to supply the skills to our economy. Now, last week, I happened to be with the Victorian Premier and my counterpart minister at Kangan TAFE, and we were announcing 60,000 fee-free TAFE places starting next year for Victorians. That's, of course, part of the new initiative of the Albanese government to have an additional 300,000 fee-free TAFE and vet places starting next year. And that will mean that workers in this country will be able to enter into courses, enrol in courses, and acquire the skills that they need to actually get meaningful work, and it will mean, of course, businesses will also be able to find the skilled workforce that's important. We inherited not only $1 trillion of Liberal Party debt, Speaker, we were bequeathed the worst skill shortage in five decades in this country, and that's the reason we're attending to it. And of course, the other thing we needed to do, and of course we have been doing so, is bring the states and territories along with us on this very important initiative. That's why we negotiated a national skills agreement between state and territory governments and the Commonwealth government. This is the first national skills agreement in a decade. So for the entire 9 years of those opposite in government, they did not enter into one national compact with states or territories or with industry. And that probably explains in many ways why there's shortages in the construction sector, in the energy sector, in the care economy and many other sectors of our labour market. Well, this government is getting on with the business of supplying the skills that are needed, and that's why the National Skills Agreement will actually provide the vehicle for reform for the vet sector. So it's not just about ensuring we have courses now that are in areas of demand, but it's also about reforming the vet sector so it's fit for purpose, working closer with universities, working closer with industry to supply the skills for a modern economy. That's what the Albanese government's doing and will continue to do it, regardless of the failure and incompetence of those
Order,
opposite.
The minister's time has concluded. The call to the Honourable the Deputy Leader of the Opposition.
My question is to the Minister for Immigration. Among the hardcore criminals released into the Australian community by the Albanese Labor government are brothers Juma and Zachariah Chole. They have been in detention since 2014, where they've been held for fracturing a man's skull with a baseball bat. Their visas were cancelled by the former coalition government. The minister has had 6 months to respond and to draft legislation which would have prevented these individuals being released. Why did he fail to act for the safety of Australians?
I just want to hear from the Leader of the House to make sure we get this question right. Hear from the Leader of the House.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. There was a ruling you made earlier in the week with respect to the fact of the High Court's role in this, and questions previously were adjusted as a result.
To assist the House, if the Deputy Leader can just phrase it in consistent as we did the other day.
Well, on the point of order.
On the point of order.
Well, on the point of order, Mr. Speaker, just so that we're very clear here of the circumstances. The minister has a personal decision to make in relation to each of the individuals. Now, in the Solicitor General's submission to the High Court in relation to this matter, 92 cases were referred to. So, to put beyond doubt the minister's responsibility here, the minister has taken a decision originally to release 82 of the 92. He's now released two further individuals, so 84 out of the 92 have been released. The minister is exercising his discretion to retain eight in custody. No, it is an important point, Mr. Speaker, because it goes to the very point made by the Leader of the House. This is a decision that ultimately is made by the Minister for Immigration. Therefore, the proposition put to you by the Leader of the House is completely and utterly fallacious.
So that's not a point of order. It's going further than the question. We dealt with this issue the other day, but consistency. And the Deputy Leader has indicated she's happy to rephrase the question. Just to assist the House, to make sure the question is within order.
Is out of order.
The Leader of the House.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, to the point of order, you made a ruling a couple of days ago on this. The ruling once made, the ruling asked the member to rephrase the question. That was what the Speaker ruled should happen. That was not contested by anyone. It's simply a case of including in the question the reference to the High Court, and then question time can move on.
At the time when I made that decision, it was complied with. There was no contest or question at the time. And I'm just asking to assist the House so we can deal with the question, so we can have the answer. And the minute...
Add to it, Mr. Speaker.
The Leader of the Opposition on the point of order.
Well, Mr. Speaker, it's always our instinctive default position to be of assistance to you and to the good order of this House.
Order. Members on my right.
Demonstrated our very significant track
Order.
Record in that regard. However, Mr. Speaker, on this occasion, what we're being asked of here is that the Leader of the House, for his own political purposes, dictate the composition of our questions, and that is not something that we will tolerate. If your ruling is that this question is out of order, then that is a ruling that is open to you. But I put to you, Mr. Speaker, that the question is in order. It's in accord with the standing orders, and it reflects the reality given the minister's personal decision-making capacity in relation to the 84, the other eight that are under consideration now, and as it turns out, we're advised today, another 340 hardened criminals likely to be released beyond the 92.
Let me hear the question again, as was read. Yeah.
My question is to the Minister for Immigration. Among the hardcore criminals released into the Australian community under the Albanese Labor government are brothers Juma and Zachariah Chole. They've been in detention since 2014, where they've been held for fracturing a man's skull with a baseball bat. Their visas were cancelled by the coalition government. The minister has had 6 months to respond and to draft legislation which would have prevented these individuals being released. Why did the minister fail to act?
I'll allow the question. The minister has the call.
Thank you very much, Speaker, and I thank the Deputy Leader of the Liberal Party for her question. Safety of the community has been and remains the utmost priority of this government. That Order. Was the case before the decision of the High Court, which was on Wednesday of last week, and that is why today we have introduced urgent legislation to strengthen visa restrictions and impose criminal penalties on non-citizens where necessary to keep Australians safe. All of us in this place and in the other place have a decision to make later on today, whether we can work together to keep communities safer or stand in the way of swift and effective
Order.
Action.
Order.
This shouldn't
left.
Be
we'll
a difficult choice. This legislation should be above politics, should be the response, as should be
Order.
The response more broadly. And just I want to make one additional point. Starting well before the decision was handed down, our border protection and our law enforcement agencies have been working to make sure the toughest possible conditions were in place.
Order. Member for McEwen will cease interjecting. The Assistant Treasurer will cease interjecting. The call to the member for Adelaide.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Minister for Infrastructure, Transport and Regional Development. How does the Albanese Labor government's response to the infrastructure review ensure we deliver the infrastructure our communities need while ending the rorts and waste of the Liberals and Nationals?
Order. No, the Minister will just pause a moment. We'll just pause a moment. The question's going to be read again and it'll be heard in silence, and if anyone interjects, they won't remain here. Don't know how clear I can make it. If you want to interject once the minister is answering, that's a member's choice, but not during a question. Hope everyone understands that now. Give the call to the member for Adelaide.
My question is to the Minister for Infrastructure, Transport and Regional Development. How does the Albanese Labor government's response to the infrastructure review ensure we deliver the infrastructure our communities need while ending the rorts and waste of the Liberals and Nationals?
Give a call to the Minister for Infrastructure, Transport, Regional Development and Local Government.
Thank you, and can I thank very much the member for Adelaide for the question. This government is absolutely committed to delivering
Order.
The infrastructure Australia needs, creating jobs, growing the economy,
Order.
While not increasing pressure on inflation. The simple,
Order.
Truth,
members
the
on
simple
my left.
Truth is that the Nationals failed to manage
Order.
The infrastructure investment pipeline.
Order. The that member for Gippsland, the minister will pause. The member for Gippsland will leave the chamber under 94A and take his... whatever he's got with him, and not leave it behind. The minister in continuation will be heard in silence.
Thank you very much. And it's, you know, it's
Order.
Not unsurprising that it is the National Party blokes that are making the most noise on this issue. Not surprising at all. The Labor government is committed to absolutely delivering the infrastructure Australia needs, to creating our jobs, to growing the economy whilst not increasing pressure on inflation. The simple truth is that those opposite failed to manage the infrastructure investment
Order.
Program during their wasted decade. They set the nation on a path of $33 billion of cost blowouts and an inability to add any new projects to the pipeline until 2033. That is the legacy of
Order.
Those opposite. The economic mismanagement of those opposite in announcing projects they knew did not have enough money and couldn't be delivered is frankly breathtaking, and let down every single one of those in communities who believed in their false promises. Today I have announced the outcomes of the independent review of the Infrastructure Investment Program. The review, of course, made 15 recommendations, all of which the government has agreed to or agreed in principle. No funding has been cut from the $120 billion pipeline, and all states, every single state, all states have maintained the same amount of funding in the pipeline that they previously had. Over the next 10 years, more than 400 nation-building projects are expected to be completed or substantially developed. When we say we're going to deliver a project, the community can have a faith that we will do so. We are delivering the North-South Corridor, Torrens to Darlington in Adelaide, where we propose an additional $2.7 billion. Logan to Gold Coast Faster Rail, Southern Queensland, we've proposed an additional $1.8 billion. M1 Pacific Highway, extension to Raymond Terrace, about to start imminently. Metronet on the West Coast, where we propose an additional $1 billion. The Tanami, a favourite project of mine in Central Australia, which has received an additional $200 million. The new Bridgewater Bridge in Tasmania, long awaited by Tasmanians, we're getting on with the job of building it. These are important projects across the nation. The Albanese Labor government is delivering the infrastructure that Australia needs to build a better future.
The call to the honourable member for Kooyong.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Attorney-General. Aided by unenforced regulations, lobbyists seemingly influence all aspects of this government's decision-making. We have minimal insight into who walks the corridors of this place, who they're meeting with and why. Will the Albanese government support my Clean Up Politics Act and commit to finally regulating lobbying in this country?
Give the call to the Attorney General.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I thank the member for Kooyong for her question. And perhaps to give this a bit of context, the lobbying code of conduct was created by the last Labor government. It was one of the many integrity measures introduced by Labor in government, including a new code of conduct for ministerial staff and a strengthened ministerial code. The lobbying code of conduct, which is administered by my department, it's an administrative instrument. It exists to promote trust in the integrity of government, to ensure that contact between lobbyists and government representatives is conducted in accordance with public expectations of transparency and integrity and honesty, and government expects that lobbyists and government representatives will comply with the code. It requires that any person who acts on behalf of third-party clients for the purpose of lobbying Australian government representatives must be registered and must comply with the requirements of the code. It applies equally, in answer to the interjection from the Leader of the Opposition. It also prohibits, the code also prohibits government representatives, including ministers and their staff, from knowingly or being intentionally party to lobbying by a lobbyist who is not on the register. In February 2022, there were amendments made to the code, including introducing a power for the Secretary of the Attorney-General's Department to bar a lobbyist who has committed a serious breach of the code, including unregistered lobbying, from registering for up to 3 months. And I stress again, it works by requiring both lobbyists and government representatives to comply with the code, and no government representative is to meet with someone who is lobbying who is not on the register. The Parliamentary Joint Committee on Intelligence and Security is currently, as one of its many references, it's a very busy committee, it's currently reviewing the Foreign Influence Transparency Scheme Act of 2018, which also regulates lobbying and other influence activities on behalf of foreign principals. The government is looking forward to the report of the Parliamentary Joint Committee on Intelligence and Security and will consider any representations or recommendations that it may make.
Call to the honourable member for Paterson.
Thanks, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Industry and Science. What's the Albanese Labor government doing to create more manufacturing jobs and bolster our supply chains after a wasted decade?
The call to the Minister for Industry and Science.
Thank you, Speaker, and thank you very much to the member for Paterson, who is a big backer of regional manufacturing. And the Albanese government is a government that believes in a future made in Australia, in the value of Australian manufacturing, in making things here and shipping them everywhere, in creating secure, well-paying jobs, in diluting our reliance on concentrated and broken supply chains, those broken supply chains that helped start and trigger off the inflation wave that we are fighting in so many ways today. For example, from standing up the $15 billion National Reconstruction Fund, and we look forward in the coming weeks to releasing the investment mandate for the fund, to stabilising and improving our trading relationships, and also standing up our $400 million industry growth program. Because being a country that makes things matters. It creates sovereign capabilities that help us deal with international shocks, wars that drive up energy prices, new technologies that disrupt industries, through to pandemics that expose broken, brittle supply chains. Now, I was glad I was asked about the past decade and what we were doing differently, because frankly, the best time to future-proof our economy was a decade ago, and unfortunately we saw a decade of neglect and decay from those opposite. In fact, it was a decade of Liberal and National Party government characterised by the phrase, "It's not a race." Always slow to the mark, always slow to actually deal with the type of things that we needed tackled. For example, we saw our economic complexity slip. We saw, in terms of manufacturing, we became one of the least self-sufficient economies in the OECD, and we saw investment in Australian know-how plunge. And Australian families are feeling the direct consequences of that approach, an approach that never tried to tackle productivity or grow our industrial capacity to help us better fight inflation. Unlike the Coalition, our government is setting Australia up for the next decade. The National Reconstruction Fund, a $15 billion investment to revitalise Australian manufacturing, create real, sustainable, high-paying jobs and, of course, address supply chain vulnerabilities and take up the fight to inflation. Those opposite, they were all talk for 10 years. It's time they stop pretending to care about manufacturing and get out of the way while the government cleans up the mess that they left behind. This government will continue to rebuild manufacturing capabilities because it's only Labor that believes in a future made in Australia.
Has concluded. Call to the honourable member for Wannon.
Thanks, Speaker. My question is to the Acting Prime Minister. The Minister for Immigration advised 340 more hardened criminals are likely to be released by the government. Will the Acting Prime Minister commit the government to passing preventative detention legislation to stop the 340 hardened criminals from being released?
Call to the Acting Prime Minister.
Well, I thank the member for his question. As I said at the outset of question time today, I acknowledge, and the government acknowledges, the anxiety that has been felt throughout the community from the very moment that the High Court made its decision. Now, from that moment, we have been looking at every way we can in respect of
the member for Deakin,
ensuring that the steps that we take are legally robust. We do nothing to promote community safety by taking steps in this place which will not survive legal challenge. And that's to state the most obvious fact.
Order.
So we have,
member for,
from the very first
member
moment,
for Kennedy
sought to
will cease interjecting.
Put those people who are in the community into the community under the strictest conditions, and from there we have taken the steps that we've taken today in terms of moving legislation which places further conditions in relation to those people. And we will continue to look at options, but we will do so in a way where what we pass here, which is legally robust,
order,
and maintains the safety of the community.
Call to the honourable member for Boothby.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Education. What steps is the Albanese Labor government taking to build a better and fairer education system?
Call to the Minister for Education.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. And can I thank the brilliant member for Boothby for her question? Teaching is the most important job in the world, and the truth is we don't have enough teachers. Part of it's pay, part of it's workload, but part of it is respect. And that's what the Be That Teacher campaign that the PM launched 2 weeks ago is all about. It stars 8 teachers, one from each state and territory. And one of those teachers is Mrs. Frogley from South Australia. She tells the story of a young girl that she taught named Izzy, with sacral agenesis, which meant that the lower part of her body didn't develop. It meant she couldn't join with her friends doing athletics or cross country. And that's when Mrs. Frogley suggested that Izzy try swimming. The next thing you know, Mrs. Frogley was watching Izzy blitz it through the pool in Tokyo at the Paralympics. When she got back, Izzy gave Mrs. Frogley a note thanking her for getting her into swimming. And Mrs. Frogley still has that treasured note. She says in the ad, "Teaching really does give so much more back than you actually give out." And you can see Mrs. Frogley today tell that story on billboards right across Adelaide, including in Goodwood Road, in Cumberland Park, in the electorate that the member represents. But this isn't the only thing that we're doing to encourage more people to want to be that teacher. Last week, applications opened for 5,000 teaching scholarships that are worth up to $40,000 each. And already, more than 2,500 people have applied for those scholarships. 2 weeks ago, applications also opened for round 2 of the Schools Upgrade Fund. That's $215 million to fund things like replacing demountables with permanent classrooms, upgrading tech and music rooms, and outdoor equipment in public schools. And I encourage all members on all sides of the House to get in contact with their local public schools and encourage them to apply. Applications are also now open for 10 new regional university study hubs. They're places where you can go and study for almost any degree at any university close to where you live. There's 34 at the moment. Where they are, they work. That's why we're doubling the number of them, 20 more for the bush, 20 more for the regions, and 14 for the first time in our outer suburbs. As I said, applications are now open, and I encourage all regional members, work with your community, put an application in. Applications close for those on the 15th of December. They're just a couple of examples of the real, common sense, practical things that we're doing to help build a better and a fairer education system.
The call to the honourable member for Indi.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Infrastructure, Transport, Regional Development and Local Government. The government's Infrastructure Investment Program review has redirected money away from regional road projects. Yeah, yeah. The state of local roads in my electorate of Indi is dire. Regional and rural roads are disintegrating. They are unsafe to travel on. What are you doing to increase funding for regional and rural roads?
Yeah, yeah. The call to the Minister for Infrastructure, Transport, Regional Development and Local Government.
Thank you. Can I thank the member for Indi for a question? I don't accept the premise of the first part of the question. That's simply not the case when it comes to the Infrastructure Investment Program review. But what I would say is, as a member for Indi, both know, as regional MPs, both with caravans, we drive through our electorates with our mobile offices. The state of our regional roads, particularly some of our local council roads, because of the weather events that we have had, and because, frankly, we are seeing more traffic on those roads, that they are in need of repair. It is why the Albanese Labor government is very proud, through the financial assistance grants, to continue to provide money to local government. It's why we continue to provide money through the Roads to Recovery program, why in the last round we actually had to find provision for the last round of the Local Roads and Community Infrastructure Fund.
Order.
We increased by $250 million, taking the last round to $750 million of roads and local community infrastructure funding directly to local government. It's why we've continued the Black Spots Road program, the Heavy Vehicle Roads program and the Bridges Renewal program. You will see from the Infrastructure Investment Program review there are three recommendations in particular that relate to funding that will be of sub-programs that will be of significant interest to local government. We have not released the government's response to those as yet. I'll be doing that in coming days. I know, and all of those on this side of the House, and I know the member for Indi knows just how important our local government roads are, and that Commonwealth investment in those are important, but it is also important that we have a continued investment from state and local governments as well.
The call to the honourable member for Gilmore.
My question is to the Treasurer. How is the Albanese Labor government's budget strategy right for the times, and how does this approach help address what the government inherited?
Call to the Treasurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the member for Gilmore for her question and for the dedicated way that she represents that beautiful community of hers in the south coast of New South Wales. Mr. Speaker, we understand that Australians are under pressure. We know that our economy is slowing. We know that the global environment is volatile. And that's why we're rolling out cost of living help. It's why we recognise that there is more work to do to clean up the mess that we inherited and build the kind of economy that our people need and deserve. Now, Mr. Speaker, one of the reasons why those opposite don't ask me any questions about the economy is because inflation would be higher under them, wages would be lower, and there'd be more debt as well, Mr. Speaker. They don't ask me about the economy because yesterday brought welcome news on wages and today brought welcome news on jobs. They don't ask about the economy or about cost of living, Mr. Speaker, because they couldn't care less about the pressures that people are under in our community, Mr. Speaker. They don't ask questions about the economy because they know they left a deficit of $78 billion, which we turned into a surplus of $22 billion. They don't ask about the economy because they know gross debt was peaking at 45% under them and it will be 36% under us. They don't ask because they know that interest costs are $44 billion lower because of our efforts. They don't ask about the economy because inflation in quarterly terms was 2.1% under them. It's now 1.2% under us. They don't ask about the economy because average wage growth under them was just over 2% and now it's around 4%. They don't ask about the economy because real wages were falling 3.4%
the Treasurer
under them.
Will pause. The Treasurer will pause. Now, I want to hear from the Manager of Opposition Business.
The question was about budget strategy right for the times. What we have heard is the Treasurer using almost 2 minutes to simply review the record, in highly misleading terms, I might add, of the previous government.
Forgetting inflation again.
Yes, the question did have a component of what was inherited. That is not a reason to compare and contrast the whole answer. So I'm just going to ask the Treasurer to contain his remarks back to the question without completely going...
Thank you.
The Leader of the Nationals, when I'm dealing with a point of order, is highly disorderly to interject. You're warned. Treasurer has the call.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. 620,000 jobs created under this government's term
order.
In office. Unemployment today, 3.7%. It was 3.9% when we came to office 18 months ago, Mr. Speaker. Now, the reason why I run through these comparisons, Mr. Speaker, they are factual comparisons, not opinions, is because it shows that the Leader of the Opposition's nasty negativity is no substitute for economic credibility. And we know that because of the wasted decade of division and disappointment and failure on the economy that we saw from those opposite. Mr. Speaker, we are working for Australia and we are making some progress because more Australians are working. They're earning better wages. We're rolling out cost of living help. The budget is better, Nick, and we are investing in the future as well, Mr. Speaker.
Order.
And I say to the Shadow Treasurer, who is interjecting, we will start to take the Shadow Treasurer seriously when his Tactics Committee takes him seriously,
order.
Mr.
The
Speaker,
Treasurer
and actually gives him
pause
a question.
So I can hear. So I can. The Treasurer will resume his seat. The Manager of Opposition Business.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the standing orders are very clear about not being critical of the character or conduct of a member. You specifically admonished the Treasurer yesterday to be careful with his language, and he is again violating the guidance that you have given.
Order. The Treasurer will cease interjecting. The Leader of the House on the point of order.
Just to the point of order. If it's not allowed to be critical of anyone's character in any way in this place, then I'm not sure what's been happening in question time all week from the opposition. It's one of those careful what you wish for points of order if this one gets ruled in.
I remind all members about Standing Order 90 regarding reflections on members. The Treasurer, when I'm dealing with a point of order, the Treasurer and the Shadow Treasurer, if they really want, can take their conversation outside. Order. We'll move to the next question quickly. I give the call to the member for Sturt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs. The SA Police Commissioner has stated that five of the released detainees with a serious criminal history are expected to travel to South Australia. Why has the Albanese Labor government put the safety of South Australians at risk?
Give a call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you very much, Speaker, and I thank the member for Sturt for his question. And I say once more that safety of communities across this country remains our priority. And that is why, prior to the decision, senior ABF officials briefed all local, state and territory police counterparts on the possible implications of the case. And following the High Court decision, which of course we are obliged to comply with, I say again, immediately following that decision, the AFP Commissioner briefed those police commissioners on the outcome, including the expected number of individuals required to be released. We went on to establish Operation Aegis, which is managing the overall response of federal agencies and territory police. And of course, as I've said on many occasions, we imposed the strictest possible visa conditions on those individuals. And today we introduced legislation, which I hope the member for Sturt will support in any form it comes back, so that we can ensure community safety.
Order. Give the call to the member for Higgins.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Leader of the House. Can the Leader of the House provide an update on the work of the Chamber, including seating arrangements in the House of Representatives?
Call to the Leader of the House.
Order.
Order. Members on my left, the member for Riverina and other members shall cease interjecting. The Leader of the House has the call.
Thanks very much, Mr. Speaker. And I thank the member for Higgins for an opportunity to talk about the work of the Chamber. And the rare opportunity of as Leader of the House to talk about some of the seating arrangements within the Chamber. Not an issue that I often get to discuss. On the work of the Chamber,
order.
On the work of the Chamber, there is the important role of the Chamber in bringing people together. There is a fundamentally important role of the Chamber in bringing people together. And I do want to acknowledge
order.
The conversations that have happened, including with the crossbench, on making sure that we find opportunities within this House to be able to do the leadership role in bringing people together at a time
order.
Where there is so much difficulty across the country. And so I want to acknowledge that with respect to the work
order.
Of the Chamber. With respect to seating arrangements, the seating arrangements have changed and have changed significantly during this term.
Order 340.
I haven't given you the call. Resume your seat. Resume your seat. Resume your seat. Member for Wannan knows that is an abuse of the standing orders. The member for Groom will leave the chamber under 94A. He's on a warning. The Leader of the House in continuation.
Thanks very much, Mr. Speaker. But that same concept of bringing people together is something. On the topic of bringing people together, you stand up.
Order. The Leader of the House will resume his seat immediately. Order. Order. Members on my right. Members on my right will cease interjecting. I want to hear from the Leader of the Opposition a point of order.
Well, Mr. Speaker, order. This makes a complete mockery of the Parliament when this government has other priorities
There's
to deal
no
with.
Point of
and
order.
I move the minister be no longer heard.
Question before the House, is the minister be no longer heard? I put the question. All of those opinions say aye.
Aye.
Against no.
No.
I think the noes have it. The ayes have it. Division required.
Thank you.
Lock the doors. The question is that the minister no longer be heard. The ayes will pass to the right of the chair and the noes to the left. I appoint the honourable members for Parks and Gray as tellers for the ayes and the honourable members for Bean and Werriwa as tellers for the noes. Order. The result of the division is ayes 50, noes 87. The matter is resolved in the negative. The minister has the call.
Thanks very much, Mr. Speaker. I won't refer to the glass jaw, but I will refer to the fact that in the time that we've had, that we've been in this House for this Parliament, I'm talking about the member for Monash is no longer sitting with you. I'm talking about the fact the member for Clare is no longer sitting with you. I'm talking about the fact that the member for Aston left your side, joined ours, raising the average of both sides. And now the walkout on his own party is left by himself, is led by himself. Because he's not the only frontbencher to walk out on his leadership. The member for Clare, Barara, McPherson, Senator Payne, the former member for Aston and the former member for Fadden all walked out on his own leadership as well. In terms of the empty frontbench, Andrew Bolter suggested who should fill it. Andrew Bolter suggested the empty frontbench should be filled by the member for Cook, not realising the member for Cook possibly already holds portfolios there. We've then had the Leader of the Opposition himself write in The Spectator about potentially Tony Abbott coming back. So having an argument as to do they go back to Morrison, do they go back to Abbott, or do they do what the Shadow Treasurer is doing this week and go back to the H.R. Nichols Society, an organisation described in 1986 by Bob Hawke as a group of political troglodytes and economic lunatics. Those opposite have a shrinking party room, a shrinking front bench that has shrunk even more than I thought during the course of this answer, and a leader who we saw shrinking before our eyes when he spoke yesterday.
The call to the Acting Prime Minister.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I ask that further questions be placed on the notice.